Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
Yeah, that's me. It's a big day for me. Lots of time on the radio. Very excited to be here at WBNY for the Football Club of Buffalo show. I am, as mentioned, Nicholas Mandola, coming from a place of soccer, NBC Sports Soccer. We just watched Arsenal Man City. That'll be on the menu today. Also, of course, do some work with FC Buffalo. And I'm joined by Ben Tsujimoto of the Buffalo News soccer blog. That's soccer.buffalonews.com.
That makes you 4 for 4. Well done.
I am just killing it.
Batting 1,000.
On the blog front, son. So we got a lot to talk about today, and we wanted to throw this out there. We do a horrible job of telling you that you can call if you want. And this is Buffalo soccer, so something's on your mind. We're ready to chat about it. 716-878-5104. That's 716-878-5104. But we're going to start with the Premier League, as they say. And there's a lot to discuss as we move forward, and other things we'll hit on in this show, in theory. I say it now and then. Ben, as we learn after the show, usually there's something we just completely ignore that we mentioned and teased.
I like when we tease stuff and just don't address it, because people are waiting and waiting and waiting, and they never get to it.
They never get to it.
And it can't be frustrating.
Real Madrid scoring 10 goals is interesting. FIFA suspensions, which are hilarious to me. It's almost, there's a sporting edge to it, and we'll get to it. But when you suspend a guy who's probably going to jail, it's like, oh, great, so he won't be able to participate in soccer when he's in jail.
Well, that guy still says FIFA is still working well.
Yeah,
and
sure
he says,
is.
I'll be back.
He will. Schwarzenegger style. And some other things to mention. The All-West New York High School dinner, we haven't spoken since then, and that was a lot of fun as well. But let's begin here. Arsenal beats Man City just a few minutes ago. The game ends at the Emirates Stadium. Manchester City did a little bit more of what we saw from them last year in a disappointing year, which is not realize until there's about 20 minutes left that they needed to be the better team in the game. And it made for an interesting ending. Yaya Toure scores another fantastic goal. He might as well have been passing it into the goal. It was an unbelievable shot. Barely swung his leg at it and just did things. It's one of the things that brings majesty to soccer, is because when we watch it as fans, sometimes you'll watch a goal and be like, yeah, I can see how they did that. And then other times you watch and be like, I don't know how I would do that with my foot. I don't know how I would do that with that velocity. And that's what happens. And Toure does that a lot. Whether or not he's your archetype of a consistent player, when he does what he wants to do, it's unbelievable to watch.
I think he still teases you with that, with the production of 2012, 2013, right?
Yeah.
That was his peak year. And you still see glimpses of it, but they're so few and far between. And you notice that he's lost a step, but there's still those reminders like today where you're like, whoa, this guy used to be, you know, one of the Premier League greats.
He's that guy who reminds me of that the question we always ask in America: what if LeBron James grew up playing basketball? What if Kobe stuck with, or I'm grew up playing soccer. What if Kobe stuck with soccer? And Kobe made that comment. If you read his Players Tribune piece when he announced his retirement, he talked about how there was a moment in time where he came very close to just, he missed a shot in a big game for basketball, and he came very close to just dedicating himself to soccer. And then I just think about this. I mean, what is Kobe, 6'8"? Is he taller than that?
He's 6'6".
Is he? Yeah. In that range, that guy with that speed and that competitive drive, you just wonder, would he have been Clint Dempsey? Would he have been a center back?
He'd probably be playing for the Wilmington Hammerheads right now.
Yeah, well, that's potentially also true. So anyways, Manchester City with Yaya Toure cannot come back to beat Arsenal. And that means something very interesting. I was rooting for a tie. Why? A draw, excuse me. Because I was hoping we'd go to Christmas with Leicester City guaranteed they'd make it through Boxing Day in first place. A 2-point lead over the victors, Arsenal, a 6-point lead on Man City. And as crazy as this sounds, Leicester can find itself 9 points ahead of City if they beat them coming up soon. Leicester's next two games are City and Liverpool. And while I've been espousing for a couple weeks now, much to the chagrin of people on NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk, a lot of comments back at me yelling at me for my my Leicester comment. I don't think it's sustainable. If you dig into the stats, and I'm sorry, I'm rooting for it. I want to point that out there. I want Leicester to win the league. I want them to finish in the top four. But they are currently, you ready for these stats? First of all, they have one clean sheet this season.
Mm-hmm.
They are the worst team in the Premier League in winning balls in the air.
Really?
And they have the worst pass accuracy on balls on the ground.
Was that from WhoScored.com?
That was, those were from Squawka.
Oh.
No, wait, those are from a variety of different sites. I was all over it because I wanted to feel like it was for real. Mm. And the stats at Kafani is, hey, they're really bad and in the air and when they play the ball on the ground.
But you know what? They score goals.
They
when
do
they're
score
important.
Goals. Yeah.
And they have two guys who are right now in the best form of, you know, anyone in the EPL, maybe except for Mesut Ozil, but pretty close.
Whatever inhabited Hazard last year has just jumped right into Mahrez and left Hazard in the dust.
You said that so smoothly. Inhabited Hazard? That was, was magical.
Appreciate it. Magisterial?
Magisterial?
A little Ray Hudson?
Don't bring that word up. I missed that in a spelling bee in sixth grade.
Did you?
Yeah, it was rough.
I was once bounced from a geography bee for thinking Easter Island was Mozambique.
Oh, man.
Big mistake.
How did you recover from that, Nick?
Never did. Still, obviously, I'm still bringing it up. So, I mean, this is what it comes down to here. We have teams 2 through 5 in the Premier League table. Absolute giants of the game. Spurs, at least, not an absolute giant, but a recognizable and strong game with a lot of money behind them.
One of the big eight, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Liverpool down in 9th. Chelsea has risen to 15th. So, what are the odds now? Legitimately speaking, not to have the same conversation for a separate week, so we won't dwell on this, but Leicester City beats Everton in a very fun game.
Mm-hmm. 5 goals.
What are the odds they have a 7-point lead on Tottenham and Manchester United, and Crystal Palace for that matter? What are the odds they outlast all four of those teams and finish top four? Those four teams being Arsenal, Man City, Spurs, and Man United.
The odds are growing, but I don't think they're above 50% yet.
Okay. 50% is a number I think most Leicester fans would take.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I mean, that is arguably generous.
Yeah.
I'm not downgrading your analysis, the sugilytics there.
Mm.
But I will say this. I think 50% is...
I said it's below 50%.
Sure.
But approaching at this rate, if they beat Liverpool and City, then what?
If they beat Liverpool and City, that means they will have gone through the entire Premier League slate.
Yeah.
They will have played every team at least once. And even if Arsenal wins both of their games, they will have a 2-point lead on Arsenal. They will have at least a 9-point lead on City.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if they win out, obviously their lead is going to be at minimum where it is right now. You'll have to talk about them as a contender. I think they're a contender for Europe right now. That's not exactly a mind-blowing thing to say, but when it's a club like Leicester, that conversation has to happen. Right now, Crystal Palace is tied on points for the top four with Spurs and Man United. Watford is a point back. And it's interesting to note that for all of these teams this year, it was just about surviving. Not all of them, but for any team outside of those big-name teams, it was just about surviving the next year to get the new Premier League money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be even harder for teams to jump up and survive moving forward because of how much money is going to be coming these sides way. So the three teams that drop out this year are making a pretty critical mistake. Not that that's
They're
ever...
not trying to.
Yeah, not that that's ever the case. Villa, I watched them play Newcastle. And granted, I had one eye on it from most of the game because the Sabres were playing the Blackhawks at the same time, and that's my job.
I watched a decent amount of that match, though, as well.
Hard to judge a monsoon.
It was miserable, you know?
It was
like,
horrific weather.
I'm sure you've played in matches like
that. Would
have
been canceled in the BDSL.
Oh, absolutely.
That match would not have happened. Andy Evenhouse is taking the ball and going home.
Yeah.
The referees are calling that one off. They are not interested. Hope you're listening, Andy. Villa, to me... 10 points away from 10 points away from safety, they are not staying up in my mind. I know there are 22 games left in the season, or I'm sorry, 20 games left in the season. I just don't see it happening.
21, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're cooked. I think they're absolutely cooked.
I think Sunderland's cooked too.
I think Sunderland's terrible,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I think they're cooked. 5 points is not a problem. Five points when you're bad is a problem. And look at the teams immediately above them. Swansea is a step up in class.
Oh, but underachieving.
Underachieving.
Terribly.
Well,
yeah.
So is Newcastle. So is Chelsea,
mm-hmm.
right? West Brom, Bournemouth, Norwich, those are teams you could see dropping back to the pack. Newcastle has shown a bit of a pedigree for being bad, for underachieving. I get that. I don't expect Swansea to be in the drop zone.
Yeah.
Just the caliber of player between Gomez and Ayew.
Sigurdsson.
Sigurdsson is brilliant player. Very good. They're a very good team.
You know, the problem with all the chatter about Leicester is that it's hiding a lot of other good stories in the EPL.
Mostly Watford, which I love.
Yes, well, mostly Watford, but I think Crystal Palace is a good story. I think Bournemouth is a very good story,
sure,
and I know you're not wearing your Bournemouth pin today.
It's because it's on my other jacket.
Oh, brother.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't have a Bournemouth pin right next to the FC Buffalo logo. That's awkward.
Is that confusing?
I think it confuses
Well, you can root
no
both
one.
For AFC Bournemouth and Watford.
You can.
And by Watford, I mean Bournemouth, but yeah.
You could do that.
You could do all three, even.
Yeah, I like Watford a lot. I think Flores has done an incredible job because you're bringing guys up who have never tasted the Premier League. I mean, that is a team that hasn't been in the league in a long time. Ighalo and Deeney are guys who are trying to bring a scoring record to the championship, and granted, it took Deeney a while to get off the schneid, so to speak, but they are playing like they've been Premier Leaguers their whole lives, the old Charlie Austin.
And they out Jurgen Klopp. High pressure, two really athletic forwards, guys like Martin Skrtel is still having nightmares from that match yesterday.
Liverpool really looked poor. They really struggled. And it's just a reminder that you can bring in a coach with a better mentality or a different mentality and you can shake things up, but there's still a lot of cobwebs you're going to have to clean up. And they're still cleaning up what's going on there. It'll be interesting to see what Klopp does in January. I'm sure he's been given the green light to spend.
Should buy a keeper.
He should buy a keeper. Bogdan did not do well. Bogdan is young, though. Euro keeper for Hungary. Team I'll be rooting for this year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
but
true.
I do have to look at them and think, they just spent all that money on Benteke. Benteke will never fit a Jurgen Klopp system. So can they move him on right away? 4 months after signing him. Sorry, buddy. You got a new contract in Kusla. Because he'll work in England.
Yeah.
He will work for a lot of teams that are willing to lump it up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. West Ham would probably like to have him.
West Ham would love to have him. I mean, he is an upgrade from Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
Man, look around. Pair him with Lukaku at Everton.
Yeah.
Because the way Leighton Baines whips in crosses and the way Barkley gives service.
Yeah, maybe they're too similar there, though.
Well, yeah, and they're not going to swap a Merseyside
no. right.
derby there.
Yeah, it does seem ridiculous.
There's just a lot of players. Southampton, even what they do with
Pella. Yeah.
Pella.
Not Pelé.
Mm. No. There are a lot of teams that could use a guy like Benteke. It'll be interesting to see. Do they want to find that money? You know, they're not going to bring in a guy like Aubameyang, who clearly Klopp would like, just because BVB's not selling. They're a great story.
What are your feelings on Mignolet? Because
I don't think he's bad at all.
Really? You don't think he's bad? Because I feel like that's a real worry for Belgium, too, is like...
He's their number two.
Yeah. What is it? Is
Courtois.
It, oh, Court. Okay, yeah, never mind. Yeah. I take that back. I think Belgium is perfectly fine.
Though. Yeah. No, I think he's a worry because he is... The way we talk about... I think he's good, but he's not great. And he's in that lower echelon. He's not in the category of Courtois. He's not in the category of Czech.
Do you take Tim Howard or do you take Mignolet?
I would take Tim Howard.
You would?
I would take Tim Howard. Not age-wise. I mean, right now, for
right
the
now.
Rest of the season,
yeah.
I'm taking Tim Howard.
Very immediate.
Yeah. I think that's the discussion we'll have moving forward a lot in all of these leagues as player movement becomes as freakish as it is and as quick as you're not thinking about the next 15 years.
How crucial do you think keepers are? Because looking at the top, and like that's, I know that's an obvious question. Yes, having a good goalie is important. But if you look at the top five right now, all of those clubs have very strong keepers. You know, like, and maybe the weakest one is Kasper Schmeichel,
yeah.
And which is why you said Leicester is an outlier in terms of their statistics, right?
Yeah, and I don't think he's had he had a really good year last year. I enjoyed watching him play. I thought he got left out to dry. Mm. I'm worried about him this year. But yeah, Czech, Hart, Lloris is fantastic. De Gea, the argument on the Olympico is interesting for me from the Bournemouth game. I still put a lot of that on him. But mm-hmm. one of my goalkeeper friends, a lot of people know, my co-owner, FC Buffalo, Scott Fraunhofer, he did not want to have any interest in putting that on De Gea. Whereas when it happened, I was just like, man, you got your hand on it.
Yeah, but it was Martial there, right, against the post, right?
The back post.
So De Gea goes up with his hand and sort of runs into Martial, and maybe it just jostles him enough, but still, you're a goalie. You should prepare to get jostled and still make be able to stop a corner kick that's bending into your net. You know, it's
well, yeah, and then but the question is now go into that next group, and Crystal Palace is playing Wayne Hennessy, who's in form but was their third-string keeper a month ago. Watford has a Spurs outcast, is it, how do you say it, Gomez? It's Gomez, but I don't know how to say
Jarelho.
Jarelho. Yeah, West Ham, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Here's the thing that I have a problem with. And we actually got a Twitter comment on this about pronunciation last week.
Mm.
And I laughed because it's very interesting. We're hearing 32 different pronunciations. So the same thing when Henrik Talinder and Tony Ludman famously with the Sabres had their names changed before a season because Paul Hamilton from GR asked them, how do you say your name at home? And then just ran with it. Today, I got to hear, I forget who it is, but they must give Man City, all the Man City games to the same guy on NBC. But he always calls Kevin De Bruyne, De Bruyner. And
which is not close.
Yeah.
It can't be close.
There are myriad names. Mm-hmm. To go with these players, and we tend to latch on to the way that people with English accents say them and then bring them back to America. So that's always my thing. Although Adrian, clearly, that's Spanish. That's not a tricky one. Goalkeeper to me is almost like manager. It takes your club. If you're at the bottom, it's going to save you maybe from going down. And if you're at the top, it might help you differentiate yourself from a pack of teams. You know, if it's going to come down to all those teams, you got to ask, who do you like better, Lloris or Cech? Who do you like better, Hart or De Gea? But in the middle, it's still a gigantic net, and playmakers, soccer's kind of engineered for that, just like basketball. It is engineered for offense in terms of when you get a clear scoring chance, you should probably score.
But it depends on the style that your team plays and the style that you're facing, right?
Sure.
I mean, if your team is usually compact and conservative in counters, the job is considerably easier, I think, for the keeper if everything else is equal, you know? Whereas if you play an open style like Leicester, perhaps, who probably doesn't have the strongest defense around, I feel like that puts more pressure on a guy like Kasper Schmeichel, and he gets tested more. Obviously, there's a lot of variables here, and you can't really concretely say anything about a team style in relation to how important their goalie is, but I still think it's something that's useful to talk about.
That's what's so attractive about Leicester, though, because they treat their keeper almost at a level of responsibility that Bayern Munich gives Neuer, right? And it's Bayern because, yeah, we're comfortable. There's only going to be two or three of those balls coming to you a game, whereas Leicester's like, look, if we want to keep doing this, we just got to get nuts. Uh-huh. And I respect that. I think it's attractive. And I think it's kind of funny that juxtaposition of Leicester and Arsenal near the top of the table or at the top of the table right now, because Arsenal has this reputation for playing wide open, gorgeous soccer. Well, what happened when they went up 2-0 today? They just sunk back and absorbed Man City. And no one's going to say that to Arsenal Wenger after the game because he scored two goals.
Mm-hmm.
But for everything, if Mourinho did that, we'd be talking about them parking the bus.
Mourinho would have started that way, though.
Yeah. Well, no, exactly. No, exactly. Yeah. But Arsenal had to, if they wanted to establish themselves on City, they had to go that. Although, very interesting to me that they were able to be broken down with Otamendi out there. I mean, they were good goals. It was a fun game to watch.
How much do you think that City's missing Kompany? Because I know a lot has been made about it. Because, like, Demichelis obviously was a nightmare when he was in there. But they spent a lot of money on both Otamendi and Mangala, right? So it seemed like they were preparing for Kompany to be less of a factor as...
And he was less of a factor last year, arguably.
Yeah.
So that's what's frustrating to me is I want to tell you they're missing him a lot, but I still have ghosts of last year. Mm. When you mentioned Kompany, I guess I haven't been completely sold that he is back to where he was. It's the same thing with Yaya, a different level, because Yaya's mercurial player, his attitude, his work ethic, mm-hmm. whereas Kompany, it was just a battle of form. I didn't think he was mentally checked out last year. It's still what we talk about with center backs, Ben. An electric forward is going to make you look bad once the whole game, and people are going to judge that moment. We famously had a discussion, I believe it was you and I, but it could have been someone else, that was actually in the FC Buffalo camp, but we were talking about an outside back this year who did a very, very good job on Russell Cicerone at UB. And there was a part of me that wanted to be like, sure, but he scored coming from that side. So does that qualify as a very good job? He got his goal.
Was he responsible for that?
I believe that there's at least an argument to be made about it, but that's not the point. You make one mistake or your team makes one mistake, and one guy gets on the score sheet, and there isn't an immediate thing where you're reading, you click on the link and it says Arsenal 2, Man City 1.
Yeah.
It lists the goals. It doesn't say 84 aerial duels won by. So again, it's always going to be that way. You're going to be more attracted to the stats.
And what was the possession? Like, the possession in that Everton-Leicester game, I think, was 2-1. It was 67-33 in favor of Everton.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, there's all sorts of statistics that you can't really put too much stock in, because that's also part of what makes soccer cool, is that you can dominate a lot of different statistics. You can dominate corners. You can dominate shots on goal, and you can still lose. And it's the old Barcelona situation where, like, empty possession doesn't really matter, you know? Like, it's okay if you have 30% of the ball as long as you score twice.
And Ranieri with Leicester City is kind of, I think he's establishing, I love what's happening, because in their desire to counter and their fact to say, look, you can have the ball, but when we get it, we're going to strike with a vengeance. I think that serves as a good example for other teams that yes, we're what's the word you're looking for? We're hunkering down,
yep.
We're bunkering down, but when we get that ball, our mentality is, here's our chance, and let's be clinical about it. Mm-hmm. And I like that. We saw it with Barca the other day, where they gave up that 2-0 lead, essentially via counters. It's gonna happen from time to time. I guess it all goes back to what we started the show with Leicester, though, is Ben, I can't sit here and tell you I'm comfortable thinking counterattacking as a mentality is going to be good enough to finish top four in a league. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is literally their mentality. They go into games looking to counter.
But the thing is, they can dedicate so many players to defense because of how dynamic Vardy and Mahrez are. You know, like, they don't need a ton of help up there. So it may seem like they're bunkering down and countering when they're just not committing a lot of numbers forward, because they know they have two supremely talented players up there.
Sure.
And Mahrez can beat guys off the dribble. Vardy is the kind of guy who likes to get in behind. So, you know, anybody can play Vardy, and it can be an outside back. It could be a center back. It could be a punt, you know. Those are the kind of luxuries that you have.
Just relentless.
With both Vardy and Mahrez. So, I mean, you can just set up your attack that way. You can play conservatively on the other nine positions of the field, let those guys do their thing, and you'll still get goals, which is amazing. One of the amazing things about Leicester's run.
Barcelona's transfer ban ends, right? It ends, it's ending now. So it's essentially when transfer business opens up. I just wonder, is Leicester going to be able to, as a club, not used to ever seeing... Yeah. Has Leicester, going back to maybe the early 2000s, ever seen, they haven't been a part of this big money?
No.
Barca calls up and says, hey, we really like that Mahrez, not for sale. Yeah, £100 million. That's going to happen. Their resolve is going to be tested. The story over the weekend that Gus Hiddink is interested in either Vardy or Berahino, and you know Chelsea will pay top dollar. And Leicester's going to have to sit there and say Vardy is 28. He turns 29 in early January. So arguably by any time a sale was made, are you going to pass up Chelsea money for a guy who scored 5 goals in the Premier League last year, but has been red hot this year? And he's been fantastic. I think it's a very, very interesting question. And again, got a lot of heat for my post on NBC from Leicester fans who are saying, but we're backed by a wealthy Thai businessman. I get that. And that's cool if he wants to ride that way. But, man, you're talking maybe... Would you say it's safe to say that they've got to do the pounds conversion here instead of dollar signs? They've got 80 to 90 million pounds between those two players, with Mahrez being 24 years old.
Yeah, I'd say so. And to me, as like a Buffalo sports fan, you think of the Drury Briere situation, two guys who mean a ton to your team.
Right.
And I know it's different here because it's not the same transfer idea.
And there's no Vanek behind him.
Yeah.
No player who's giving you hope if you do sell both.
Which makes it even harder for Leicester. And look at the fallback in Buffalo as a result.
They go to Europe. I think that's a really good comparison. But they go, except they were both older. Both Briere and Drury were older, and you risked losing them for free.
Right.
You look at Leicester, though, next year, if they do achieve their dreams, right? They keep Mahrez, they keep Vardy, they push on, they get into Europe. If they want to not drop right back to 12th and 13th, they've got to get 5, 6, 7 guys.
Yeah.
It's a mistake we've seen Swansea make, we've seen Newcastle make. You qualify for Europe and you go, you know what, let's just see how it goes. Instead of, look at what Chelsea is able to do. All right, you know what, we're just going to play Hazard at midweek and we're going to slide somebody else in. you know, Willian has been a Champions League wonder. Mm-hmm. So that's what's interesting to me. Sure, you hang on and you make it. You better be willing to spend in August. So you're going from not taking any money in to having to spend money.
One thing I was looking at was City and how deep they are in the midfield, you know, and how much that helps them in Champions League, mm-hmm. especially compared to if you juxtapose City and United. United now out of the Champions League, they don't have the depth because injuries in large part, but also because they just don't have the depth in comparison to what City has. Like, if I can just read off to you City's midfielders who are active today, it was absolutely wild. Between Sterling, Navas, De Bruyne, Delph, Silva, Fernandinho, Yaya Toure. Like, this is
unreal.
Scary, you know? And it's wild. And
Navas is a toy for them. I think last week I made the point he has the second most assists of anybody on City over the last 3 years to Silva. And that's unbelievable. I'm going to take a break. We're going to get into other countries besides England. Although, at some point, we're just going to have to marvel at Mesut Ozil. Ozil.
We should marvel at him soon.
Wait. Ozil or Ozil?
That's probably Ozil in German, right?
It probably is, but we're in America.
Yeah, we can pronounce it several different ways. It could be Ozil.
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 What's up, friends? Back here on the Football Club of Buffalo show, I'm Nick Mendola from NBC Sports Soccer's Pro Soccer Talk. And Ben Tsujimoto is here from BN_Soccer. That's the Buffalo News Soccer blog. A quick shout before we get back into the on-field stuff. All-Western New York High School dinner was last week at Classics 5. Helped throw it along with Section 6. Had a really good time. Met a lot of very, very good people. Made a couple ref jokes directly at refs, which is always
that's big.
Always a lot of fun.
Got to get those in when you can.
Former teammate, good to see former men's league teammate Richie Wien. It was up for referee of the year, and I like to see there were a lot of young refs there, and even one of the winners, and I'm totally blanking on his name, and I had a nice cold glass of water with him afterwards. There's a new young crop of referees that are supplanting some of the, but I'm sure it's a more of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Horrible calls, just bad at their jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not talk. I'd rather not talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking around the leagues, looking around that dinner, though, was really neat. Just seeing where the players are coming from. Growing up, being from Kenmore East, where our team was state ranked, and looking at who were the best teams at the time, Louport was a power. Mm. Clarence has always been a power. Orchard Park was big at the time, and now
Grand Island's always been big too.
Yeah, but Grand Island now is at another level and basically swept the awards. Frank Butcher got Coach of the Year, the former UB player. Troy Brady, Player of the Year.
Can I talk about Troy for a second?
Talk about Troy.
I was able to see Troy both in the high school setting in one of Grand Island's sectional games, but I managed to see him play, and this was like a 11 o'clock game at Sportsplex. It was after one of the games that I played. And I was like, you know, I'm going to sit here and watch Troy Brady play soccer for 25 minutes.
Sure.
Wasn't a super...
He was playing against men, we should point out, probably,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was playing against men, yeah. And it wasn't it was like a playoff game in the sense of like a fourth plays fifth kind of playoff game,
sure.
Or maybe third versus fourth. But he's playing against men, which is a really good point. That's one thing that I should emphasize. But he is...
Playing against Ben?
No men.
Oh.
Not me.
I was like, listen, you switched into third person pretty casually there.
Now that I've confused everybody.
Yeah, playing against men.
Men, yes. Troy Brady, he's just, you could see the things that made him special as the boys' Western New York Player of the Year. He is incredibly quick. He is a very good finisher for a guy who's a midfielder.
Yeah.
We're not sure where he's going to school yet. There's a lot of whispers that, maybe it's Canisius. Maybe it's not Canisius.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see where he decides. And it seems likely that it will be a Division I school. And it would be great to see him, and after talking about Izanika Say and Liam Callahan, maybe it's Troy Brady is the guy who carries the baton for Western New York soccer moving forward.
It'll be really interesting to think about that. I'd like to see him. I'm hopeful of seeing him in the next few weeks, especially with we're going to be around Salins a lot for FC Buffalo tryouts. And I'm interested to see how he fills in. We didn't get to see Shane Green last year. Got hurt very early for Canisius and then quickly got into redshirt territory. And he's, to me, a player who, with his gifts – could be something really special. And that's one of the things that Dermott has done over at Canisius, Coach McGrain, is made sure to swoop in and pick up guys he thinks are very good from the local area. That said, guys like Brady, very interesting to me whether they choose a place like Canisius or the Suniac. And I'm not just saying this because we're on Buff State's airwaves. Very competitive conference. You can stay around New York. It'll be interesting moving forward to see those players who have been maybe peripheral guys at Niagara and Canisius, whether they try to assert themselves or go to a place where they think they can win a D3 national championship. And we saw Oneonta go to the Final Four this year.
And the cool thing is you can do both. Sorry to interrupt. Buffalo State's goalie, William Banahini, was on Niagara's roster for a while, you know. And if you find yourself at a Division I program where maybe you're the number two or you're the third or fourth guy off the bench and you do get to see opportunities at Buff State or Oneonta and so forth, like, you can spend 2 years at each institution. And maybe it's a little tough as from an academic standpoint like a social standpoint and all that stuff. But if you're solely focusing on soccer, you know, you can try out one and then move to the other. And like, I think we're starting to see that more and more. D1 transfer is going to play for whether it's a Suniac or
vice versa. Right. I've done my job here at the D3 or D2 level. And I want to test myself a little higher. Mm-hmm. Interesting. To stay on the high school point for a moment, these players now are getting recruited out of high school, not just to colleges, but to the BDSL front. And that's one of the areas where I really want to kind of applaud it, because that's going to hasten their development as well, to play against, if they're in the right league, if they're in the right contest, to play against men. It's a challenge we see at FC Buffalo is, you've had a great year at D1. Now you're going to go up against a midfield of 6'2 British guys who are only here to play soccer for the summer. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to me. A couple names I'll be monitoring very closely. And I hope there are coaches out there that are recruiting them for the college scene. And I hope that their grades are good enough and all that as well. But guys like Ali Shawoosh, which, by the way, it is Shawoosh, had a very deep discussion about it with his coach the other day. Because it's spelled Shawish, but it's Shawoosh.
His Twitter handle is Shawoosh.
Right, that'll get you.
That is, it's very helpful.
But him, Palu from iPrep,
who has one more year of eligibility, correct?
And does he?
He does. Okay, I was able to verify that, and it's interesting because this is a guy who's won a state championship, but iPrep keeps growing in size. You know, they went from D to C to B.
I think they're B now, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they're going to continue to grow as well. So before you know it, IPROP is going to be an A school athletically, and you're like,
that's a litmus test right there.
Yeah, it really is a litmus test, and that's, you know, growing very quickly. But
Yasser,
good.
Their keeper, is pretty highly rated as well. Mm-hmm. The guy who I fortunately didn't crush his name, but I'm probably going to do it now. No, Sean Hyung Leon, I think it is.
Okay.
So I root for, just because of the stories behind him are obviously is interesting, but city schools have been downgraded for so long. And Izana kind of forced people to open their eyes to what might be going on there. Because, look, you're putting up crazy numbers. It's the D3 argument. Mm-hmm. There have been players we've seen at the D3 level score, or a JUCO level. Well, great, you've scored 28 goals, but one of these teams was that you've played, you scored 6 in one game. I'm going to be looking very closely at how these kids do moving forward because, you know, we see a lot of these other kids get tested at Empire. They get tested, you know, going through the gauntlet that is ECIC1 or whatever the case may be. I want to see these kids at the next level, and especially with us having one of the weaker D3 conferences around here recruiting locally. I mean, not weaker in recruiting locally, but you're the AMCC. Mm. Is a school where if you're a difference maker, let's say, pick a guy, Ali Shawoosh. Let's say he goes to a Hilbert or a DUville, and that's a place where, because of the level of the conference, you might be able to score 9-10 goals as a freshman. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really might. And
Look at Nick Dumond, who was one of the better players last year coming out of high school. He goes to Medi, starts a lot as a freshman, scores a bunch of goals. Now he's setting himself up for a pretty good college career.
Yeah.
So it's, you're right, it doesn't take long.
Where
for
did
some
Prince
of these guys
go? Riverside? Prince Sese?
Yep.
Yeah. So more of the same. Mm-hmm. Back to the pros, where all these kids seemingly would like to go. Did you see what happened at the Bernabeu last weekend?
No, but apparently there was a rout of some type.
Bernabeu,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just, this is on purpose, by the way. I'm fully in in on-purpose mode at this point. 10-2 is the score.
Burn a boo.
10-2 is shocking. And Rayo Vallecano, their manager, comes out and says, I'm humiliated. I'm embarrassed. This isn't good for La Liga. Cristiano Ronaldo, who scored a pair of goals, and Karim Benzema, who I may have not scored in the game, but played 90 minutes. Played 90 minutes.
He needs the fitness, Nick.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's hard to get CR7 to sub off.
Oh.
With his, he's got so many things to do. He's opening 4 hotels. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
They are going to be gaudy.
Oh, yeah.
Every bathroom is going to have a photo of him nearly nude, I'm sure.
Yep.
But
if you look into a mirror, you're just going to see
Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, so it's not
yourself.
Really a mirror. It's like a hologram.
Yes.
A little bit like a, what was it, Snow White?
Tupac.
yeah, literally, you wake up in the morning, you get the wake-up call, and a hologram of Ronaldo says, what would you like to do this morning besides look at me? 10
that
goals,
sounds
though.
Creepy. I'm not going to that hotel.
Yeah. At what point at a professional level? That is the highest professional level, right? I mean, that is, La Liga is one of the best leagues in the world. Do you, not top to bottom, obviously, do you expect them to call off the dogs?
No. I mean, they don't have to.
No. They don't have to, but would you, are you okay seeing a 10 up there? I am.
For entertainment value, I am, you know, and I'm also okay the other way. I'm not going to take a very strong stand on this. I think if I'm the manager of that team, I say at 5-2 or 6-2, I'm saying, hey, let's possess. Let's not make it obvious that we're not trying to score, but let's really beat them down in position and wear them out in terms of just kill their spirit. Don't embarrass them on the scoreboard, but beat them 6-2 or 7-2. But you don't need to score double-digit goals. So blow them out all you want. Win 6 or 7-2, but don't make it so people are talking about it the next day.
Yeah. We may be getting a surprise guest.
Ooh, a surprise guest.
We literally may be.
Just a comment from a caller. She didn't want to necessarily go on air, but she did want to say, you know, that city schools around here, they don't get enough credit, you know, for, you know, how the athletics they do end up developing. And she did want to say, to piggyback off the comments of, you know, how well the local scene has been doing here. And that South Park High School is one of the first. It is the first public school to win a state championship in any sort of sport.
Yeah, Timmy Delaney did a great job coaching over there.
Tyree Brown, very fast.
very fast. No, so I was saying Derek got a call off the air to make a comment on the city schools, which I thought is great, but we may be getting a call from a special
thank you,
guest
Shelley.
Momentarily. Yes, thank you, Shelley. La Liga, just to stay in there for a moment. Top to bottom, where does it end? They have, what, 5-6 decent teams.
Yeah.
Would you even go further than that?
I'm trying to think of how
I'll go deeper for Bundesliga. I'll give them that level of credit. La Liga, I don't want to dip more than 5 or 6 teams.
This is going to be embarrassing, but I'm not actually sure how many La Liga teams I can name.
I want you to do this right now more
than
anything.
No, this sounds terrible.
Let's go for it. I've got the table up. I've got the table up. I think I'm looking at it. And you can't use Rayo, so we're going at a 19.
What?
No, you can't.
That's ridiculous. That was one of my underdogs that I was going to be able to mention.
I'm going to say you can get 8.
I don't think that's true.
You don't think you can get 8?
Maybe.
Go.
Let's say. Barcelona, Real Madrid, Valencia, Atletico Madrid.
Yep, that's 4.
Do we have a Real Betis in there?
We do.
We do? That's big. You were not expecting me to get that.
No,
I'm really
it wasn't.
Just buying myself time to think of another one.
Not at all.
Rayo Vallecano, which is clearly 6.
Yeah. Now we're counting it,
apparently. Beyond that, I'm going to need some hints.
You're going to need some hints.
Yeah.
Did you get both of the V teams?
Oh, Villarreal. I should get Villarreal.
You should?
Yep.
How about the team that won the Europa League last year?
I said Valencia, too, didn't I?
How about the team that won the Europa League last year?
Ooh, I'm not sure who that is.
Sevilla.
I should, you know, if I knew my Spanish geography better, I think I would just be naming, you know, different cities.
How about
more on the geography problems, huh, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, producer Derek gets a dig in there.
How about Barcelona's rival inside Barcelona?
Ooh, the Catalonian rivals?
Yeah.
Not
Espanyol.
Oh, Espanyol with a Y.
Yes.
Espanyol.
I would like you to get Athletic Bilbao.
Oh, I should have known that. They're sometimes in the Champions League.
You're missing the 4th-ranked team right now in Celta Vigo.
Well.
And how about David Moyes' former team?
Mm,
the Real Social Dads.
Rangers.
The Real Social Dads.
So, you know, I mean, off the top of my head, that was about as I expected that I would do.
I think you did well, yeah.
I mean, it's not great. As far as Bundesliga went, I don't think I could go basically as deep. You know, I mean, I can tell you every EPL team, though.
I think I could I think I could knock on the door of all the Bundesliga teams.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do we want to try this, or is this overkill?
It's probably overkill, but this is our radio show, and it's the Monday before Christmas.
So
give us a Christmas present here. Come on, let's list it off.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Let me know when you have your table up.
I just have the schedule, which is not helping me.
That's not going to help you much at all.
No.
Bundesliga. So, it's giving me more time to brainstorm,
which
everyone's loving. They're listening to my thoughts just piling up.
Oh, well, I have it up. There are 18 clubs, Nick.
18 clubs. All right. Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Wolfsburg. I'm sure that's a V there.
It is a V.
Werder Bremen, Hoffenheim. Was Hamburg relegated? No, Hamburger SV, Eintracht Frankfurt.
You're just showing off now.
Now I'm wondering who this is where the memory gets in, because I don't remember who I already said.
Think Fabe.
It's the hockey of concussions. No, of course, Borussia Mönchengladbach, or apostrophe Gladbach is how I like to write it. Stuttgart, Frankfurt.
You already Frankfurted.
I already Frankfurted. Eintracht Frankfurt. Yeah. I don't want to bore the listeners much more, because Schalke.
Steve Cirundolo, you can get in there too.
Cirundolo was, wow, how am I blanking on it? I know
it's got a number in it.
Yeah, Hanover 96.
Very good.
Yeah. That's 18. It's not, but.
No, it's not. Have you gotten Hertha Berlin yet?
I had to say Hertha. There are John Anthony Brooks and the United States center back. Yeah, I think he's got a legitimate shot.
I don't even know what an FC Köln is.
You guys have done very, very well.
Oh, it's Cologne.
It's Cologne.
Oh, it's Cologne.
That's not
really
pronounced Cologne, but they
confusing.
Are. Right. It's one of those names that gets. That's the problem on NBC whenever I refer to Hamburg. Do I call them Hamburg or Hamburger SV?
Hamburger.
Hamburger.
That's my favorite Law & Order.
Now I'm hungry.
Law & Order Hamburger SV is a very good.
You guys did very well, though, naming all these people off, so this is for you guys.
Crimes Against Meat.
Here we
go. There you go. Right there for you guys.
Applause.
Where's Steve Harvey? That's what I want to know.
Can we have an awkward moment with Philippians now?
Yes. The District of Columbia. Tough moment for him.
Oh, that's too bad.
So let's get into FIFA real quickly. Sepp Blatter. Michel Platini. 8-year suspensions, theoretically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm left. I mean, we're putting up the posts on NBC. And I'm thinking, I don't need to read this. These guys are going to jail. Maybe not Platini, but Blatter, as rich and powerful as he is, barring him absconding with all of his belongings to an island of some sort, the guy's going to jail. I don't care how long he gets suspended for. He's not going to be elected president. And I think if you really want to talk about what would hurt him more than anything, would be to be totally irrelevant, because his ego has played such a massive role in all of this.
He'll be back, Nick.
You think so?
No, that's just what he says.
Oh, of course he does.
I have no idea if he will be or not.
His entire existence was worth it, if only for the scene where the comedian made it money rain on him, which remains one of my favorite moments in soccer. 9 on-field moments and the pictures of him bewildered as money fluttered around him.
He hasn't been charged with anything yet.
Oh, he will be.
He will be. I know, yeah. And I think that's to come. But he is desperate to appeal to basically everyone. There's the Court of Arbitrating of Sports.
CAS. Yeah.
Court of Arbitration for Sport. That is the second place he's going to appeal after he appeals to FIFA.
Right.
So there's a lot more legalese to come, I believe. But both he and Platini, who seemed to be Sepp Blatter's successor, which is no longer going to happen. But right now, you know, taking the place of Sepp Blatter, I mean, that really should be our concern, right, is who is going to step in for FIFA and control this, you know, world's governing body. I don't know. You know, there's, I think it was BBC Sport had a list of potential names, and one including Tokyo Sexwale from South Africa.
Yeah.
That was just the best name to say on there. So, but he is one candidate. And I think it's interesting. And we don't know who any of these guys are, just as we probably really didn't know much about Sepp Blatter before he came to power.
Yeah, and I want an outsider more than anything, just for that reason. And I know that doesn't necessarily mean there aren't good people on the inside. Be interesting now that the Copa Centenario has been awarded to the United States. Would Sunil Gulati like a run at it? would the world deal with an American running it?
Mm. How did you feel when Sepp says he essentially blamed the U.S. in that the U.S. didn't get the the 2022 bid?
Who blamed him? Blatter?
Sepp, yes. Yeah. Sepp says, we wouldn't be here right now in this really awkward discussion if the U.S. had got it instead of Qatar.
Right. That's right. Because people wouldn't have said, wow, how did the U.S. get it? People wouldn't have said, wow, that tiny nation that is getting a World Cup awarded to itself, despite that it's going to be 110 degrees.
Yeah, and people are dying in the
That was even before that. But yeah. So to me, you're right. No one would have batted an eye if England was also in the running for that one as well.
Yeah.
What would people have said if England won it? They would have said, oh, the World Cup's going to England.
Yeah, it's like he's regretting his cover-up now.
Yeah,
like,
he's...
It's like, why didn't I choose one of these big nations?
I'm ready to be done. Better safe, better late than never.
Okay.
And it's certainly not his fault. We had to get him phone numbers and his crazy English phone number. But here in the States right now, so on our clock, usually unable to be on the show, is the lead editor and writer at NBC Sports Pro Soccer Talk. It is Mr. Joe Prince-Wright. Joe, you're on with me, Nick, and Ben.
Nice to speak to you guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Joe.
Joe, happy you're in town because I wanted some perspective. We started the show, obviously, talking about Arsenal and Man City. I'm positive you watched it. What is your takeaway right now, walking away from that game?
Well, it was just pretty much the same blueprint that Arsenal put down against Man City right at the start of 2015. If you remember, that's when Francis Coquelin came in to hold a midfield position. Arsenal, you know, they said, we don't want to keep the ball anymore. We're going to let other teams have the ball, and then we'll spring counterattacks. That's exactly what they did today. Final stats were 37% possession for Arsenal. And in all truth, they could have won by a more comfortable margin. They had a few chances. Joel Campbell, Aaron Ramsey missed. But very mature display from Arsenal. Walcott, Giroud looked lively. Ozil's seamlessly linking everything together. And I think it was a big statement in the title race. And on the flip side of things, Man City without Vincent Kompany is a totally different team. They look very dodgy at the back in the first half. They're not going to be a million miles away, but I would say it's advantage Arsenal in the title race. Of course, along with Leicester City, we have to take them seriously now.
Well, what's your story? The story of the year is obviously Leicester City, but what is your story moving forward? You'll obviously be watching to see what happens with the Foxes. And granted, you and I have had this conversation off the air, so I'll actually ask you for your take on them. But moving forward, what are you really focused on? I know you did the calculations. You literally went through every game and how you thought it could play out to see how your table would finish out. What's your focus for this quote-unquote second half of the season?
Well, Nick, to be honest, I think the unpredictability is going to continue. From the predictions that I sort of made, as you mentioned, went through every single game, predicted scores, had Crystal Palace finishing in third, being very tight between third place and seventh, very tight in the relegation spot. And I think this season really has been a breath of fresh air for the Premier League, and that shows all the money that's been invested from foreign owners, from bumper TV deals the last 5-6 years now. We're seeing teams like Leicester, Crystal Palace, Stoke, West Ham, Watford, whoever you want to mention, up there fighting with the big boys, and it's getting tougher for the big boys to stick around. But I certainly think Leicester will—they'll come unstuck somewhere along the line. But it's a wonderful storyline for the Premier League, and long may that continue, because it's been incredible to watch Mahrez and Vardy rip it up. But I'm really looking to see if these big boys, the top four, perennial top four or five, can fight back. And I think in January they're going to have to spend quite big, and that will make the January transfer window a lot more interesting than it has been in the past. But if these smaller teams can keep hold of their top players, we're looking at Vardy at Leicester, Mahrez, Ighalo at Watford, then they've got a chance of breaking into the top six. Why not? It's been a crazy, crazy season.
Joe, if when you look into your crystal ball, do you see Leicester City keeping both Mahrez and Vardy, or does one of them go now just so Leicester can make a bit of a grab? And I mean, even if they lose one, right, they're in a lot of trouble, because I feel like the two sort of rely on each other. So what happens in January, do you think, for Leicester?
Well, Leicester, they're backed heavily by a Thai ownership who have a lot of money, and now they're in a position, Ben, where I think they can actually go out and spend 25, 30 million pounds on players in January if they really want to do something special, because that cash is going to be there. They know they're not going to get relegated this season. Whatever Ranieri keeps saying about 40 points, 42 points, they're up, they're not going down. And if they want to finish in the top four, they not only have to keep Vardy and Mahrez, which I think they will. If they have to cash in on one of them, they cash in on Vardy probably, because he's older. it probably will never, ever, his value won't be as high as this, where Mahrez has got a lot more upside. He's younger, and he'll probably leave in the future. But right now, I'd say they keep hold of those two, invest the money in January. They've got a great chance of finishing the top four, but I honestly don't think they will. I think they'll slip off a little bit. We have to remember the season is so long in the Premier League. And we even saw Everton last weekend. It looked a little bit shaky at the back, and that's because of the likes of Hoof and other people were missing, and Drinkwater. And already their squad's starting to take a bit of hit through injuries, which will take its toll in the long, long old season that is the Premier League. But I think Leicester will keep hold of both of the players at least until the end of the season. And then I'd probably expect Vardy to go on if he's still banging the goals.
How much money do you think Vardy goes for? I think I saw £30 million the other day. Is that is that in the neighborhood?
Well, it has to be.
That's crazy. It's insane.
I know. We're talking about a guy who bought for £1 million about 3 years ago. And when Leicester were in the championship, he was contemplating quitting soccer because he couldn't get in the team, couldn't score goals. And even last season, he struggled. He only scored 4 or 5 times, and most of those towards the end of the season. So if he went now, Nick, he's an England international. He's scoring goals in the Premier League. He's 28. He's in his prime. For a striker, he's got 4 or 5 good years left in him, you would say. And if a club came in like United or Chelsea team struggling to score goals and said, here's £30 million, you take it. He hasn't got long left on his contract, I believe 18 months to 2 years max. So you cash in. You cash in if someone brings crazy money in. But as I mentioned before, if I'm Leicester City, there's no need to sell these players. You know you're not going to get relegated. Quite the opposite is true. You need to spend £30 million on 2 or 3 players to strengthen the squad. Don't bring too many players and don't upset the apple cart. And then go from there. But Vardy is worth, in this day and age, £30 million, no doubt.
Want me to give you my astute buy if I'm them? What I'd really like to see Leicester do is to hold on to the both of them, obviously, but to add that depth and to give them some insurance against Vardy going, why not buy a Charlie Austin? Why not swoop down and get a guy like him? Because his record, arguably, just as good as Vardy's, and he's going to cost what? What was the number quoted for him? Was £18 million. So yeah. You know,
even less now, probably, because he's got less to go on. Yeah, I think he'd be a great buy. Like you said, you have to have an insurance buy there, someone who isn't too upset about sitting on the bench every now and then. They could come in, work into that team ethic that Leicester have an abundance there. Yeah, good buy, I think. And they also have Uyoa and Okazaki's playing really well too, so they still have options if Vardy goes down, but he's the main man, isn't he? I mean, there's no doubt about that.
What positions would you encourage Leicester to add? Are you comfortable with both Huth and Morgan as your two center backs? And it seems like guys like Fuchs and Simpson are overachievers right now. So you wonder if the second half of the season, maybe they regress to the mean, or if there is a regression to the mean. Where do you upgrade? Is it on the wings because you're comfortable with Drinkwater and Co inside?
Yeah, I think so. I think that you need to just add. It's not even about adding players who are going to come in to start. It's about adding good competitors who are going to come in as good or if not slightly better than the players you have, but they're willing to buy into that team ethic. But you've got guys like Gökhan Inler from the Swiss national team sitting on the bench, Nathan Dyer's there. I think you just need a bit more insurance. And the way that the January market is, you're still going to have to spend £30 million to bring in 3 or 4 insurance players in positions throughout the team. I think they need to just add numbers, because the one thing they have in their favour is that if they go on an FA Cup run, that's great. But apart from that, they don't have European competition to worry about, which the other top 7 or 8 teams do. So they have that in their favour, Leicester. They won't have as many games in the second half of the season. But they do need to safeguard and say, hang on, these guys might run out of some fuel and some legs in the second half of the season. So we need to prepare for that. And I'm sure Ranieri, the astute Italian tactician that he is already doing that.
Joe, I did want to ask you, one of the main reasons I wanted to get you on is we get to see your takes all the time on the Premier League and the Champions League, etc. But where are you at as someone who has played collegiate soccer here at Pitt, who has played professionally a bit, and monitoring what's going on here in the United States, where you get a guy like Steven Gerrard come over and not have as big of an impact as he had in the last 5 years, where you see a national team set up where Brad Guzan and DeAndre Yedlin are in the top 5 for male player of the year. Just your overall overarching take on where domestically and internationally soccer is here in the United States.
I think domestically, there's no doubt about it. even if Lampard, Gerrard, Tuchel, etc., struggled, I think MLS has definitely strengthened over the last year or two. The depth, the CBA, although some people don't agree with that, I think that strengthened the league in terms of the players that are able to stay in the US from a domestic standpoint rather than going overseas. So I think the league's going from strength to strength. We've seen that with expansion teams and the league saying more and more teams will be added rapidly. And NESL, USL, all the pyramid, I think it's becoming a true soccer nation. It already was, but domestically from a club point of view, it's been fantastic to see that. So I think it's going from strength to strength. And the MLS Cup final really epitomized that factor. Portland and Columbus Crew, two of the most MLS teams you're ever going to find. So that was fantastic to see those two guys going at it, and obviously Portland getting the win. But that's domestically. I think it's very healthy. On the flip side, internationally, I don't think it's very healthy at all. I think Jurgen Klinsmann has a lot of problems to address in 2016. It's been a bad, bad year in 2016. We go back to the Gold Cup debacle, I think it's fair to say. Lost to Jamaica and lost to Costa Rica in the third place game. Wasn't good enough. And then after that, being happy in World Cup qualifying with a 0-0 draw at Trinidad and Tobago, really, that showed the problems that the US is having right now. And in between that was obviously the CONCACAF Cup loss to Mexico in overtime, which was pretty, I have to say, that was demoralizing in terms of how far the US was off the pace from Mexico. And Mexico had some key players missing too. So I think Klinsmann has a lot to sort out. Guys, I don't know what you think about it's a pretty big year with the Copa America coming up.
Joe, Joe, I was just going to say, I'm going to risk alienating one of our coworkers at NBC and Andy Edwards when I say this, but I look at what Mexico has now with three or four players on the same Porto side and playing. I want to see, and Ben and I have talked about it a lot, I want to see more Americans testing their mettle at the top flights of Europe. And I realize that it's all about them getting on the field and playing, but especially these guys like Miazga, who has a European passport through Poland, I've seen that he can play for the Red Bulls. I've seen that he can succeed at MLS. If there's a team in the English Championship that wants him, or even the Premier League, then I want to see him take a shot over there. I want to see more guys in England. And when the U.S. was better, we had better guys there.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that's the problem now. We're talking about guys getting a chance and going to the Championship. I mean, that's
right.
It's not strong. Like, you have a better chance to stay in Major League Soccer. It's a similar level now. It's getting towards that. And I think if you're going to go to the Bundesliga or French top flight or La Liga or somewhere like that.
With Bob Bradley.
Yeah, exactly, which is great if you're playing regularly. But as soon as you're not playing regularly, then you're struggling. And you have to look around the Premier League. Guzan, Howard, Yedlin's in and out of Sunderland. Jeff Cameron's pretty much the only guy who's playing week in, week out when he's not injured for Stoke City. And that screams like a big problem for me. And I think Klinsmann, with Dempsey out the door, Bradley coming back, still under the surface, I don't think that he'd be too happy with some of his key players coming back. No matter how much MLS is growing, it's still not as good as Serie A, still not as good as the Premier League, and that's the reality of it. And until you have 7, 8, 9 U.S. national team players playing week in, week out for top European teams, I don't think you can challenge the likes of Mexico. I really don't.
No. Johnson and Cameron right now are the two guys waving the flag right now. And there have been some injuries as well with Johansson, et cetera. Joe, I really appreciate your time. I look forward to having some ice cold waters with you soon while you're in town. and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good evening.
Thanks, Joe. Go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
Oh, boy. You just opened a can here, Ben Tsujimoto.
I've opened a nice little football can in the football.
American football.
Buffalo show.
How about those Bills? Is that show going on tonight? Derek?
That's actually following it right now.
You can hear Derek talk about football, right?
Yes,
American football.
American. We go from the all around world football to American football, just like that. The old egg ball.
I think halfway through their show, they're going to induct Kirk Cousins in the Hall of Fame.
They probably
that.
Yeah, I do like that. Yep. Play a little hand egg. The national hand egg league. I'm just joking, guys. You like that?
You like that?
I do like that. I like the show. We'll see. Actually, we are off next week.
We are off next
week. Yes, FC Buffalo tryouts are next Monday. I encourage you to come say hi to the Suge. He'll be there. Ben Tsujimoto. Get some Sugelytics.
Sugelytics.
See what he sees. And
We need to make that a thing.
It is a thing.
It's kind of a long hashtag, but
you're a long hashtag. Yep. See you next week. Thanks, Derek.